CRT started a new series of mini webinars called Case Studies with Dr. Kate. Once a month in 2018, I will cover my favorite neurotransmitter case. Sometimes the neurotransmitter results will be interpreted with other tests that are important for the clinical picture of the patient. The purpose of this mini webinar series is to really focus on one case at a time with special attention paid to neurotransmitter results. I hope you enjoy these and find this new series helpful. Last month, I covered Rachel's results, the symptomatic female patient, and this month, I'll be talking about James. I picked James's case because his symptoms profile is very common at DRT. We tend to get a lot of patients testing with us who are male in their 30s, 40s, or 50s, and who report being completely burnt out. So meet James, the burnt out male. So, James is 48 years old. He is a healthy weight at 6'1 and 185 pounds, and he reports having a lot of symptoms. Most of his symptoms fall in the moderate and severe categories. His moderate symptoms are grouped as hypometabolism symptoms and high cortisol, and then his severe symptoms are low cortisol and low androgens. And before we go into any of his test results, I'd like to introduce a spoiler alert. He has all the low androgen symptoms, but his testosterone is normal. So keep that in the back of your head. For therapies, James is on vitamin D, curcumin, melatonin, and 5-HTP. So a word about James before we look at his test results. James reports being completely burnt out physically and mentally. And with that, some of his bigger symptoms are fatigue and some restlessness and anxiety, but also insomnia. He has issues with staying asleep and falling asleep. That's why he's taking 5-HTP and melatonin in the first place. He has actually had a history of a lot of GI disturbances. And in the past, in the recent past, prior to getting his neurotransmitter test done, he cleaned up his diet. He actually got tested for food allergies, and he came up positive for eggs, dairy, and wheat. So he eliminated those out of his diet as much as he could. And I think he stuck to the diet pretty well. And he eliminated junk food and then embraced a healthy lifestyle. So he's actually an avid fisherman and a hunter. So he goes fishing. He gets his own wild Pacific salmon, and he gets wild elk. So his diet is really clean. And together with, you know, starting to exercise more, he's really the perfect patient. He's really vigilant about keeping up with his healthy lifestyle. So despite having a really healthy lifestyle, James reports having a lot of symptoms. So this is an example from his requisition form that James sent in with a sample. This portion of the requisition form is very important because it translates subjective information from the patient into objective findings in the lab. And you can see how these, some of the symptoms that James reported, for example, the burnt out feeling, is used, if you follow these dark lines, it's used to translate into specific symptom categories at the bottom. So his symptoms add up to severe low cortisol symptoms and low androgen symptoms. So take a moment. This is yet another example of a patient who is just right for the neurotransmitter test, somebody who has a lot of fatigue symptoms, a lot of mood symptoms, and how their, you can see how their symptoms group together at the bottom into these categories. So knowing that the patient is mostly in the yellow and red zones, this is a really good example of somebody who should be tested for neurotransmitters. And I'm glad that he did. So here I wrote out a summary of his symptoms, the mild, moderate, and severe. And you can see that some of the mild symptoms are apathy, increased forgetfulness, decreased mental sharpness. Some of the moderate symptoms are mental fatigue and physical fatigue. And then the severe symptoms are kind of categorizing them into that burned out, completely drained feeling mentally and physically. So that is the overarching theme for James's symptoms, is that he's pooped. He is really exhausted. So now, what does that look like with some of his lab results? We happen to have his 2016 results for saliva, steroids, and vitamin D in blood spot. And then he did his neurotransmitter results in 2017. So keep in mind that this is the year before he tested his neurotransmitters. So estradiol and progesterone look great. His androgens look really good, actually. You can see that his saliva testosterone is in the perfect range for his age. The DHEAS is also in the normal range, maybe nearing the low end of the normal range, but still within normal range. And then his saliva cortisol is, it looks good. It's a little high in the morning, and it's a little low at night, but for the most part, it's the right shape, so he has the proper cortisol waking response. So he looks great. And keep in mind that his androgens look good, and they're normal. Now let's look at his neurotransmitter results that he did in 2017. A couple things that I'd like to point out here are the groupings for neurotransmitters that we have. So we have the inhibitory neurotransmitters at the top, and then the excitatory neurotransmitters at the bottom. Keep in mind that they're all modulatory neurotransmitters. So in the body, they perform all kinds of different functions, but for the ease of us interpreting the numbers from the report, we grouped them into inhibitory and excitatory, with general assumption that those are the function that these neurotransmitters do. So inhibitory kind of are the calming neurotransmitters, and excitatory are, well, excitatory. Another important part of this portion of the report is the optimal range right here. So the range itself was constructed by looking at neurotransmitter levels in a large number of healthy volunteers, and we picked the 5th and 95th percentiles for cutoff. And then the optimal range was constructed with 20th to 80th percentile cutoffs in mind. So what does it mean when somebody's outside of the optimal range, but within the low normal, high normal range? Well, it means your patient is in the yellow zone. So they're not quite in the red zone, so they're not quite, their symptoms are not quite screaming. I guess their results are not quite screaming yet, but in the yellow zone, we oftentimes see very good correlations with symptomatology, and that is the zone where a patient might be in where treatment may be warranted. So let's go through these results one at a time. So first of all, let's look at serotonin and 5-HIA, and those are high because of 5-HTP supplementation. And at the time when James tested his results in 2017, we didn't have a specific range for 5-HTP supplementers. And in that year, we were just gathering information, looking at all the patients that supplemented with 5-HTP, and we saw that the results for both serotonin and 5-HIA were quite a bit higher than our normal range. So this is 5th to 95th percentiles for serotonin and 5-HIAA, with the medians presented as the symbols. And then patients who take 5-HTP, you can see how much higher their results are. So based on this information, we constructed new ranges for those patients that test with us for serotonin and 5-HIAA who report taking 5-HTP. And you can see that James's results are actually normal for 5-HTP supplementers. So moving on with that, we see slightly elevated histamine results. And that is not surprising, taking into consideration James's prior history with food allergies. Assuming that he's sticking with his diet regimen, with avoiding the food that he's allergic to or that he's sensitive to, depends on how well he's doing with that. And it's possible that he still could have some baseline histamine response going on if some of the food that he didn't get tested for are getting a signal, histamine signal out of him. So the elevated histamine result could be explained by some of the gastrointestinal allergy issues that he's had in the past. And then lastly, we'll look at his catecholamines and PEA. So let's take a look at that a little bit more closely, because it looks like most of these species are running on the low side. So low PEA, we typically see associated with reduced attention. So symptoms that James reported specifically to this would be decreased mental sharpness and increased forgetfulness. By boosting that PEA response, we can really help patients get their attention back and kind of reduce that hyperactivity that they could be experiencing alongside the inattentive symptoms. Low dopamine, that's one of my favorite lab parameters. And it's a favorite because in the burnt out male who has normal testosterone levels, oftentimes we see low dopamine levels. So for James, his levels of dopamine are actually low normal, so outside of the optimal range, but not quite outside of the range. But even with the low normal result, we see so many male patients who have that low dopamine tone, normal testosterone, and yet they report all of these low androgen symptoms, such as decreased stamina, fatigue, burnt out feeling, irritability. We actually refer to this type of clinical picture as the burnt out male profile. So it's very common that we see low dopamine or lower than optimal range dopamine in patients who report low androgen symptoms. And then we also see low norepinephrine and all of its metabolites. So norepinephrine is the neurotransmitter or hormone that's responsible for controlling our sympathetic nervous system tone. So that's a molecule that would regulate blood pressure, blood sugar, make sure that our body responds to everyday stressors in an adequate manner. So when norepinephrine is running low, you can expect to see symptoms of decreased mental sharpness and increased forgetfulness. Normetanephrine is a metabolite of norepinephrine that arises from adrenal metabolism of norepinephrine. So this is also low, and then VMA is running low as well. Additional labs that James ran at the same time are cortisol, cortisone, and melatonin. You can expect melatonin to run higher because he's supplementing with both melatonin and 5-HTP. And his urinary cortisol, it doesn't look terrible. It runs higher in the morning for sure, and then it normalizes at night. So these results are not typically would be very alarming, maybe some agitation in the morning. This first morning sample right here represents what's happening throughout the night. So he is borderline for his cortisol production at night. Maybe it is a little bit higher than it should be, in which case it would be keeping him up. But overall, these results are not very bothersome, I guess, or unusual in their presentation. Where we do see a lot of issues with James is in his diurnal rhythms of norepinephrine and epinephrine. So in addition to glucocorticoids such as cortisol and cortisone that are produced in the cortex portion of the adrenal gland, the medulla produces other hormones, which are norepinephrine and epinephrine. So this middle portion of the adrenal gland is responsible for producing catecholamine molecules. So the majority of catecholamines that the adrenal gland produces is epinephrine. So that's basically another way to look at the adrenal health, right? So cortisol is one way that represents more of a long-term stressor exposure. And then the epinephrine is more like that fight or flight, that rapid response to a stressor. So you can see that when we're assaying his diurnal rhythm for epinephrine throughout the day, almost none of his results fall within the normal range. It starts out high normal, right on the border of high. It jumps up to high, and then it drops at night. It's zigzagging throughout the day. So this is telling us that his epinephrine production is high throughout the night, and that at night it just falls. And so that could contribute to his feeling burnt out in the afternoon completely, where he's unable to move. And then norepinephrine, yes, a small portion of it is produced by the adrenal gland, but the majority of norepinephrine that we see in urine actually comes from the sympathetic nervous system. So sympathetic nerves that innervate all of our peripheral organs, they produce norepinephrine to regulate all the physiology that norepinephrine regulates, blood pressure, blood sugar, sympathetic tone in general, cognition, attention, etc. And you can see that his norepinephrine tone, so his sympathetic nervous system parameters, are fairly normal in the morning, but then they drop. So these low values of norepinephrine and epinephrine in the afternoon could certainly explain why he has no energy in the afternoon. And then the early morning results that are high for epinephrine. This could explain high overnight production of epinephrine and could be responsible for his fragmented sleep and why he wakes up and can't fall asleep again. It's because his epinephrine is kicking in. So let's look at some therapeutic strategies that his provider recommended. First would be continuing with existing therapies. So continuing vitamin D, which looked great in his blood spot, continuous curcumin, which is anti-inflammatory, it would be great for his gut health, and then making sure that he's taking melatonin and 5-HTP to be able to supplement and feed that serotonin system and stay asleep at night. His provider also recommended a general digestive support formula, as well as digestive enzymes and a little bit of betaine HCL to help digest some of the meat that he's eating. And then the general wellness neurotransmitter support includes tyrosine and lacuna. So tyrosine is a precursor to levodopa, and then L-DOPA is a precursor to dopamine. So his provider prescribed him a formula that contains both tyrosine and L-DOPA, which is a constituent of Mucuna pruriens. It's an herb that is very commonly used to support the dopamine system. And one quick note that I wanted to mention before I move on is that for somebody who is supplementing with 5-HTP for a long time and supporting that inhibitory aspect of the neurotransmitter, so such as serotonin, those patients can turn into couch potatoes at some point, because the 5-HTP, so the serotonin precursors, can sort of hijack the dopamine neurons and make sure that those dopamine neurons are actually producing serotonin, flooding the system with too much inhibitory signal and not enough excitatory dopamine signal. That is why it's important for patients that are taking 5-HTP long-term that they introduce that excitatory support sooner than later, maybe within a week or two of starting 5-HTP. And the opposite is true as well for patients that are being supported with tyrosine and Mucuna. It's a good idea for them to introduce 5-HTP support so that they don't turn into, aggressive people, I guess. That would be a symptom of too much dopamine. So anyway, tyrosine and Mucuna, A+ on that treatment consideration. Rhodiola is another component of the formula that this patient was prescribed. So rhodiola is an adaptogen. It's supposed to normalize our body's response to stress. So it should kind of normalize James's norepinephrine and epinephrine tone, as well as the cortisol tone. Green tea is you would typically see green tea as a component of formulas that contain tyrosine or L-DOPA together with 5-HTP. And what green tea does, it inhibits amino acid decarboxylase, an enzyme that would prevent the breakdown of tyrosine and Mucuna or 5-HTP in the gut and make sure that more of the supplement would be intact while it reaches the brain. So that's why green tea is added to these formulas. Vitamin B6 is an important cofactor for synthesis of dopamine and serotonin. Methylene tetrahydrofolate is a precursor to make sure that folate is supplied as a cofactor for many important reactions in the body, and zinc as well to balance out any sort of extra copper that could be floating around. So 8 months later, let's take a look at what James's results look like now. And before that, we're going to look at his symptoms. So all of these green shapes that I included on this page show symptom improvement for James. Either the symptoms improved in severity, he indicated them to be less severe this time around, or they went away altogether. Some of the symptoms seem to prevail, but as a general observation in this case, you can see that James is feeling better. So let's see if his labs show as much. Okay, we're going to start with his saliva sex steroids first. So we're comparing his results from 2016 and January 2018. You can see that his saliva testosterone is still doing great. It's right in the middle where it should be. Saliva DHEAS is a bit low. Now it's outside of the range, which is okay. I mean, this could be a parameter of adrenal dysfunction, something that he should continue to be addressing, but his saliva cortisol looks pretty good. He could definitely address the low DHEAS results with his provider, but it doesn't seem to be affecting or, I guess, contributing to his low androgen symptoms in this case. His urinary free cortisol now in January of 2018 looks higher than it was in May of 2017. So his first morning cortisol is high, and this again represents overnight production of cortisol. So in this instance, our docs at DRT typically recommend using some phosphatidylserine before bed to keep overnight cortisol production minimal to make sure that that heightened cortisol response at night is not waking him up and keeping him up. So that might be a consideration for James. And his melatonin looks pretty high, actually, throughout the day. You can see that it starts out high, which is normal due to supplementation, but he's having a hard time metabolizing it. And that is something that could be attributed to long-term 5-HTP supplementation. And maybe taking a break from 5-HTP would be a good idea, depending on exactly how his sleep is doing. And that certainly could be contributing to some of the feelings of fatigue that he feels in the afternoon. So that's a consideration to address, is maybe discontinuing 5-HTP with or without melatonin for a little bit of time. Next, we have James's neurotransmitter results side by side, May 2017 to January 2018. So his serotonin 5-HIA are still within normal range for 5-HTP supplementers, and you can see that the rest of his results improved greatly. Histamine, PA, and dopamine that were high, normal, low, normal are now within the normal range. His norepinephrine, norepinephrine, and VMA were low before, and now they're low normal. So his results are improving, and that's great to see that. This is what his results looked like before. With low PEA, that is now normal. Low dopamine, that is now normal. And then improved sympathetic nervous system tone. So his norepinephrine is now only low normal, along with its metabolites. Some other treatment considerations that I'd like to mention here are targeting PEA to further zero in on that focus and attention of the patient. Some therapeutic options would be introducing phenylalanine, which is an amino acid precursor to PEA, some vitamin B6 that he's taking as part of a supplement, but maybe taking that out and giving him a full-on B complex to support PEA formation and exercise. Actually, one of the things that our docs recommend for somebody who is borderline low on PEA and suffers from attention issues is taking a vitamin B supplement and going for a run. And that kind of building that habit into the lifestyle would be very helpful for somebody to boost their PEA in a more or less natural way. And then to support norepinephrine, DHEAS, and cortisol, so that adrenal component of James's lab, is to introduce adaptogens. So rhodiola right now is part of the formula that he takes that contains mucuna and L-tyrosine, so maybe taking rhodiola by itself, and then, or trying a different adaptogen. There's so many choices for adaptogens. Ashwagandha is one great one. So kind of helping him further modulate his adrenal tone would probably be a good idea. And last but not least, we're looking at his diurnal norepinephrine and epinephrine results. So before, his sympathetic nervous system tone was low in the evening. Now it's normal in the evening, a little bit low at night, but greatly improved. And then before, his adrenal tone, as measured with epinephrine, was high in the morning and low in the evening, hardly at all falling within the normal range. And now you can see that it's taking the right shape, and all of these parameters are within the normal range. So you can definitely see how James's symptom improvement is reflected in his labs. And one more important thing that I'd like to mention is that by looking at total levels of norepinephrine and epinephrine throughout the day may be somewhat misleading, especially for a patient that presents with a lot of symptoms of adrenal and sympathetic dysregulation, because when you add all these results up, they could certainly, like for example here, they could certainly add up to a normal value, in which they did for James in his first neurotransmitter report. But you can see that just because half of his head is in the oven and half of his body's in the freezer, or I guess half of his body's in the oven, half of his body's in the freezer, does not make him feel good. So it wasn't until his results normalized that he felt some relief. These results also indicate that if James only tested cortisol and six steroids, his provider would have missed the appropriate treatment regimen. He really needed those neurotransmitter results to be able to introduce therapies that are focused in supporting his neurotransmitters, because you could be dosing James with testosterone all day long without seeing much improvement in symptoms, because he really needed that catecholamine support and not the sex steroid support. So I hope you enjoyed James's case. This concludes the review of James as our patient. Stay tuned for next month. I'm going to be talking about Alexis. And in her case review, I will be talking about why it's important to test neurotransmitters together with their metabolites, what are some important considerations, what do the results mean, when is it important to test neurotransmitters, the parent precursors, and their metabolites together, which is the answer is, I'll hint, it's always, and I'll explain the rationale behind that. Thanks for listening.